WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present National Security Meltdown with host Philip Haney. As the author of See Something, Say Nothing, Philip is recognized as a credible national security expert and frequent guest host on national radio and television broadcasts, as well as a much sought-after keynote speaker. Philip is a charter member of the Department of Homeland Security with previous experience in the Middle East. As a DHS frontline officer and intelligence expert, Philip bravely tried to say something about the people and organizations that threatened the United States. Yet, his intelligence information was eliminated from the government database, and he was investigated during the Obama administration by the very agency assigned to protect the country. Through this broadcast, Philip will expose just how deeply the submission, denial, and deception run within our national intelligence agencies. Philip's years of being an insider allowed him to be an eyewitness to the federal government's capitulating to an enemy within and punishing those who reject the narrative of the deep state. Such dereliction of duty has led to a national security meltdown. And now, here is your host, Philip Haney.
Hello, everyone. We're going to continue on with our series on national security meltdown. Today, we're going to look at Al-Qaeda, AQ, ISIS, the Islamic State, and AQIS, which may be the most important global Islamic organization, pro-jihad organization that most people have never heard of until now. And we'll go through it and then tie it all together, and you can see how these groups interact with one another, how they're actually all pretty much the same, and that the implications for our national security here in 2019. So let's go right ahead. This all started back under a person we've all heard of, Osama bin Laden. Actually, it didn't really start with him. It started 1,400 years ago. But the modern name, Al-Qaeda, and all these groups like ISIS and AQIS, etc., really started with the fatwa that was promoted, written and promoted by Osama bin Laden, February 23rd, 1998, which would be what, 20 years ago? By a group at the time that was called the World Islamic Front. And it had another name. The World Islamic Front is also known as the Global Jihad Front. They didn't really call themselves Al-Qaeda as we know of it. They call themselves the Global Jihad Front. And so what's in a name? Well, why is that important? Is because they called themselves exactly what they were and what they believed. We'll talk about what the name Al-Qaeda actually means. It's really not an organization. It's a concept. It means base. You know, we hear in the news that the Democrats appeal to their base or that the Republicans appeal to their voter base. The base is not an office in a building somewhere, room 243, where you can go and walk in and meet the people who are the managers of this organization called the base. The base is a concept more than an organization. And we use it in our political arena, and in the Islamic world, it means exactly the same thing. It is the people who support this movement or this organization. In this case, it's called the Global Jihad Front. And in 1998, Osama bin Laden issued a fatwa declaring jihad, that's what that little word right there says, against the Yahudin wa al-Sabiliun. Sabil means cross. So he's declaring jihad, that word right there, against the Jews and the Christians. Now wait a minute, you might say, I thought there was this thing called the Alliance of Virtue for the Common Good. Well, how can you have on one hand Islamic leaders saying that we're going to form an alliance and a coalition with global level with Christians and Jews, while on the other hand you have another leader, another sheikh, a master of Islamic law, meaning Osama bin Laden, who's declaring war on the same people? That's what you call a paradox, but you might also call a psychosis, because it's like their words don't add up. But I would suggest we take them at face value, because I think we put ourselves in peril if we try to redefine what they say. So the organization that came out into the public in 1998 was called the Global Jihad Front. We call it Al-Qaeda. And I would venture that most people don't realize that this original Al-Qaeda group was actually made up not of just one person, but of five major leaders, including, amazingly, Muslim Brotherhood. And we will find out as we go along that even though they have a different name and they're in different parts of the world, they're actually all virtually identical, and they all come from the foundation of the Islamic ideology promoted by the Muslim Brotherhood. And we will get into more detail on the Muslim Brotherhood in a following segment. But suffice it to say that the Muslim Brotherhood is basically the parent of virtually every single jihad group that's operating in the world today. Even in some ways, Hezbollah, which is Shia in nature, the ideology, the foundation, is so fundamental that all Muslim groups build their house, their platform, they're on this base, this ideological base. Not only was the original Al-Qaeda, or the Global Jihad Front, consisting of five people, it was also 12 different organizations. And now we're starting to be a little bit similar to what we know of as ISIS. ISIS, which coalesced in Iraq and in Syria, but actually is a coalition of at least 30 or 40 different jihad groups all over the world. And we'll look at that too. And this is part of my concern, is that so often we see in public that we're fighting against ISIS, and as though they are a self-contained entity, and that once they're defeated, then all the terrorism problems will go away. Well, unfortunately, that's not a correct narrative. And that you will find that ISIS is connected to Hezbollah, is connected to Taliban, connected to Hamas, is connected to Lashkar-e-Taiba, to Tablighi-Jamaat, to Boko Haram, and a whole bunch of other groups like it. And that they're actually forming a web, a network of Islamic pro-jihad groups that operate all over the world. It's like the NFL. There's, what, 15 or 20 teams in the NFL. They all have their own uniforms. They all have their own stadiums and fan base and management. But they all play by exactly the same rules. And when you're going for the Super Bowl, if you don't play by the rules, you're disqualified. So in a quarterback on one team, if he gets traded or drafted by another team, he runs through a few scrimmages with his new team members, and he's ready to go because he's a professional quarterback. Well, it's kind of the same with these groups. They all basically have the same beliefs and the same skills, and they're interchangeable because that's their not only their ideology, their theology, it's also their profession. They're fighting fi sabil Allah, in the way of Allah, and they have to follow the rules according to the Quran. And that's one of the things that gave me an advantage when I was an active duty intelligence officer with this Homeland Security, is that I knew the rule book as maybe as well as they did. So when I talked to them and I did interviews, interviewing potential terrorists, I knew what they believed, and they were often quite shocked that I would know it. And it gave me a great advantage as an intelligence officer to know the player playbook. Just like if one football team has the playbook of the other team, that's a great advantage to them, especially if the other team doesn't know that they have it. When they call plays, they know what to expect. And it's that way in counterintelligence and counterterrorism. If you know the playbook, it gives you a great advantage. So this is the original, what we know of as Al-Qaeda. Now here is their flag. This is the original, morphed into ISIS around October of 1999. And that just says, there is no God but Allah, and this says Muhammad, and is the prophet, the Rasul of Allah. This is the flag of a group. It's the Party of Islam in Iraq and Washam. Sham means where the sun comes up, modern day Syria and Iraq. And then here's the Islamic State of Iraq before they morphed into another group. They're called Jamaat al-Tawhid wa al-Jihad. That means the party of oneness and jihad. And that's what this here, and this up here is the Shahada, that there is no God but Allah and that Muhammad is his prophet. This flag first appeared about 14 years ago. And then here's AQIS, that group I mentioned earlier, that is the most dangerous and largest of all that most people have never even heard of. Al-Qaeda of the Indian subcontinent is a coalition of jihad groups, including Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, and Myanmar, where the Rohingyas are, the largest coalition that's ever existed in history. Al-Qaeda of the Indian subcontinent. And they emerged in 2014, about 4 years ago. And this is what their flag is. And they are the party of the base of jihad in this part of the world, the subcontinent of India, what we call India. In other words, Al-Qaeda of the Indian subcontinent. And you see there's a lot of overlap in their flags. And that word right there says jihad. Actually, it says Al-Qaeda. And here's an article on the Indian subcontinent group called AQIS. Again, you can go online and download these PowerPoints. And in the notes section of the slides of the PowerPoint are all the references that I use. So you can go look them up. And I'm really only skimming the surface of all of these subjects. Some of this might be new. This is what I did for a living for a long time as a founding member of the Department of Homeland Security, as an active duty intel officer and now retired counterterrorism specialist. This is what I did every day for years and years and years. So I'm sharing you the knowledge and the archive of information that I accumulated over the years. But you can take any one of these slides and the information I provide in the notes and start investigating yourself. And you'll find that not only in what I'm saying is really true, but if anything, because of time, I'm understating it. I'm only giving a very abbreviated presentation on the depth of all of these subjects. So you can look this up. Tells about how this AQIS organization is a coalition of probably hundreds of different jihad groups all the way from the border of Iran, clear out practically to the border of China, comprising what? A quarter to a third of all the people in the world? And they have partners too. The partners that used to be with ISIS or IS or Al-Qaeda have now come under the flag of AQIS. So keep your ears open in the days, weeks, and months ahead because you're going to hear more and more. Here is a map. You can see the colored countries. At least 43 different global affiliates were part of what we know of as Islamic State. And as Islamic State gets squeezed out of its operating arena, it is really like squeezing a balloon because it'll just pop out somewhere else, and where the popping out is happening is in AQIS, which is here, the Asian subcontinent. Now they have a magazine. Here it is right here. You can look it up online. So they're very slick. They're just like the original Al-Qaeda was, or the group that used to be under Anwar al-Awlaki. The Hariri magazine that they would put out every month or so calling for jihad. They use the same kind of media people and they create these publications and they put them out. If you know where to look for them, you can find them. You hardly ever hear about any of this on the mainstream media, and that's one of my points, is that we are going through a national security meltdown because this kind of information should be known, readily available, and not nearly impossible to find unless you really know what you're looking for. It should be It should be discussed much more openly than it is, because it doesn't do us any good as a country to misdefine the nature of the threat that we face. And here we know, you've been hearing lately about the possible outbreak of a major conflict between Pakistan and India over Kashmir. And these groups, like this one, Jaish Mohammed, are affiliates of AQIS. And they're actually recruiting volunteers now, because they're expecting a major conflict to break out at a higher level. There's a low-grade conflict going on virtually all the time between Pakistan and India. But this AQIS group and the larger subgroup called the Deobandis, that I've talked about before, even on national TV, because they're related to the San Bernardino shootings. They're called Tablighi Jamaat. They're all part of this coalition, this kaleidoscope of Islamic Jihad groups that are concentrated in those five countries, Pakistan, Afghanistan, India, Bangladesh, and Myanmar. Now, here's just some information. I won't go over the slide of the current emir, the leader of AQIS. And then this is very, very important for you to look. This is called the code of conduct. That's another phrase for Sharia, compliant behavior. Jihad has to be fought according fi sabil Allah, according to the way of Allah. Muslims are terrified of violating the law, even when they fight jihad. That's why they need leaders that are well-trained in Sharia to guide them correctly so that they will please Allah when they fight war. It's called a code of conduct. Well, AQIS very helpfully published their code of conduct in June of 2017. And you should be prepared to be shocked when you read it. You notice it's written in English. Well, why would that be? It's because their message is really directed at the English-speaking world, because the English-speaking world is the last stronghold against the saturating forces of the global Islamic movement. And they're telling us exactly what they intend to do. What do they intend to do? To implement Sharia law everywhere in the world. And amazingly, that's exactly what the purpose of the Muslim Brotherhood was when it was founded in 1928. To implement Sharia law everywhere in the world. And America is not an exception. Now, the way they go about it tactically, the way they use the political structure, like the members of Congress we've talked about earlier, and or leaders of CARE and other Muslim Brotherhood front groups to gradually normalize the acceptance of Sharia law here in America, which is completely unconstitutional. But that's how they work. They either saturate from the bottom up like water into a sponge, or they put pressure from above, and that's what we call terrorism. But both of them are for the same purpose, to saturate that sponge with water, meaning Sharia law, the sponge being a country. So the big question is, if that's their goal, then how do we as Americans protect our sponge, our country, from being saturated with this water? It's actually quite simple. We use a waterproofing of the U.S. Constitution, and that will prevent our country, our sponge, from being saturated with the water of Sharia law. But that's why we're an adversary. Remember, I talked earlier about fitna, the opposition to the advancement of Islam. Well, when you stand up against implementation of Sharia, that's basically a capital offense. So this is all very serious business that we're talking about here. Ayman al-Zawahiri, you've heard of him before. He used to be the mentor of Osama bin Laden. He's actually the leader of AQIS. He's still around. Some of you may not have even heard his name for years now, but he's still living and he's still considered the premier mentor, emir, sheikh, qadi, leader of this whole global Islamic movement. Ayman al-Zawahiri. He was there when the original Global Jihad Front was founded back in 1998. Now we're 20 years later, and he's still the leader and the mentor of the global Islamic movement. He is from Jama' al-Islamiyya. That's another name for the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. It's the same as Hamas, but Hamas operates in Palestine, and Jamaat al-Islamiyya operates in Egypt, but they're both Muslim Brotherhood, and Ayman al-Zawahiri is the leader of it, and now the emir, the leader of the overall umbrella group, now known as AQIS. ISIS has been getting beat up pretty bad lately, but nonetheless, they say that the flames of war will burn after Obama's Iraq withdrawal, and for the most part, they've been right. There's been something like 35,000 jihad attacks somewhere in the world. I think it adds up to be somewhere between 3 or 4 every single day since 9/11. We should take their threats seriously. If we err, let's err on the side of caution. Why don't we take them at face value and find the courage and the wherewithal with all it needs to protect our constitutional republic from these kind of threats? I would rather be wrong and they knew nothing than to err and find out that we waited too long to protect ourselves. Here's ISIS again. Remember, we're talking about Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and the AQIS, Al-Qaeda of the Indian subcontinent. They're all kind of kaleidoscopic. One morphs into the other. And they're warning us, this is quite recent, a couple months back, unexpected explosion in your building soon. Some is just threat, which is part of their tactic to keep people off guard. Never really know quite when an attack is going to come. But on the other hand, they're drawing an awful lot of money out of the United States, and they use that to fight jihad in other parts of the world. So it's a balancing act tactically for them. Do they saturate from the bottom up, as I mentioned earlier, drawing money and resources out of a country? Or do they put pressure on it from above, what we call terrorism? Either way, or a combination of those two tactics, they use in order to accomplish their goals, which is what? The global strategy, implementation of Sharia law. The global strategy of Islam is not jihad. Jihad is the tactic to accomplish their strategy, which they plainly state is implementation of Sharia law everywhere in the world. It's kind of a dark version of go into the whole world and teach them to obey all that I have commanded you, and I will be with you always, even unto the end of the world. It's an anti-Christian. It's a dark version of what Jesus talked about in the end of Matthew, to go into the whole world and implement the law, Sharia, of Islam, for the sake of Allah, fi sabil Allah. Here are U.S. Islamic centers that are having access to the same material that ISIS fighters and Boko Haram and Hamas fighters all and everybody else in the world refer to. The ideology is the same. The theology is the same. The instruction manual is the same. The only thing that's different is the languages and the way people dress. Underneath that, those are just like uniforms of football teams. A player can change from one uniform to another quite easily because that's what they do for a living. Very similar allegory. And ISIS continues to threaten. This is on January 1st. I wonder if that's a coincidence. Happy New Year. We're coming for you. Look at that. They have a picture of Trump beheaded. Islamic State. Oh, Trump, we will kill you soon. You think we should take them seriously? Or just assume that they're not actually capable of doing it? They don't really mean it, because after all, Islam is a religion of peace. And again, this is my premise. I don't see the indicators within the intelligence community, within the counterterrorism community, that we actually do take these kind of threats as seriously as we should. Because if we were taking them more seriously, it wouldn't just be a small group of individuals operating behind the walls of agencies over there in Washington, D.C. It would be the entire country. We would all be prepared and up to speed on the nature of the threat, just like in Israel. If you go to Israel, you'll see that every square millimeter of territory in the country of Israel, somebody is watching it, somebody is responsible, every single person in the country, and even more and more Orthodox kids go into the military for at least 2 years. Everybody participates in the national security effort, which isn't necessarily the truth today. In fact, our own Congress can't even agree whether or not we have a crisis at the border. Of course we have a crisis at the border, and that's another spoke in the wheel of the national security meltdown that we will get to later. We're going to talk about the southern border, because you've probably heard lately the news has been breaking out that the number of illegal crossings in the last few months is the highest ever. And President Trump is doing all he can to protect our national security and build the wall and help make America great again. And yet at the same time, there's more people coming over the border now than ever before. And there are a lot of reasons for that we'll get to when we talk about the southern border in one of the next segments. Here is from January 2nd. And the national security community agrees that the terror threat is getting worse, says a former Homeland Security advisor. Her name is Lisa Monaco. Should we take them at their word? Should we accept that what they say is true? Or should we continue to pretend that now that maybe we have ISIS on the run in Syria and in Iraq, that there's no threat anymore? Well, as I said, it's like squeezing a balloon. You squeeze here, and it's going to pop out somewhere else. And the way it's popping out is AQIS. Remember the rental truck jihad in Manhattan? Well, that man was from Uzbekistan. And interestingly enough, Uzbekistan is one of the original founding 12 countries in the original global jihad front. So when they say that we don't know what his motive was and we don't see any connections, do you think it's possible that that young man grew up under the influence of these pro-jihad groups and then came to America and acted out what he was told would be pleasing to Allah by running people over with a truck? We have Egypt, Al-Qaeda, and Hamas working in Sinai Peninsula to the point that Israel is now even working with Egypt because they share a common territory, the Sinai. And there are several jihad groups, Al-Qaeda affiliates and Hamas affiliates, that are operating right now in the Sinai Peninsula, and al-Sisi, the current leader of Egypt, is facing a great crisis. And this is, by the way, all engendered by the Muslim Brotherhood. Here's just a story about an American who was actually a senior ISIS commander, and that's the thing about it. You've got people of all languages and ethnic groups and nationalities that have joined this global movement, the global jihad movement, including many from America, especially like, for example, in Minnesota among the Somalian community. And here's some in Michigan. So you have this kind of activity going on all over the country. This is what I used to do when I was active duty, is interview these kind of individuals, and I looked for trends, and I would create these intel reports and send them up the chain of command. And a lot of the groups and individuals that I worked on 5 and 10 years ago have now broken out into the what I call the national big screen. The best, or maybe the saddest, the worst example is the San Bernardino attack. And I targeted that group at least 5 years before the San Bernardino attack actually happened. And that information, that classified information, was deleted out of the database by the Obama administration. And that's the main basis of the book, See Something, Say Nothing. So here we have ISIS and AQIS, etc., working over in the Far East, in the Philippines. My point here is that it's spreading everywhere, like mushrooms are popping up. Wherever you look, wherever you throw a dart at the world map, you're very likely going to hit a country that already has a presence of one of these groups operating. South America, Far East, all over. Here we have Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah in Latin America. We've known this for quite some time. So it's not just isolated over there. Everywhere you look, every direction of the compass that you face, you're going to see evidence of these affiliations and these groups operating. AQIS are working as advisors and trainers of the Taliban. Now, how in the world did that happen, do you suppose? And how come we're not aware of that, more aware of that? It's because, as I told you earlier, AQIS is the most dangerous group that nobody's ever heard of. Well, you're starting to hear more about them. And I would like to give you a little homework assignment, and that is listen in mainstream media when you're reading or listening to radio or television for the first time that you actually hear of the group called Al-Qaeda of the Indian Subcontinent, or AQIS. I'd be curious to know when you actually do hear from them. I mentioned earlier about the breaking conflict in Kashmir between India and Pakistan. Again, these are AQIS, Deobandi, Tablighi Jamaat affiliated groups that are coalescing on the side of Pakistan to fight against India. And here is a graphic burning an effigy, Jamaat al-Islami. Once again, I know it's repetitive, but it bears repeating that this group is part of the AQIS coalition of organizations. Here's a little bit of background on them. Meanwhile, on our side of the fence, if you speak up about this threat, like Marine Le Pen is finding out in France, you're going to end up being prosecuted or deplatformed or shut down or accused of being Islamophobe. And that's the other side of the coin of the national security meltdown, is that people are getting the point we're not even allowed to speak in public about the nature of the threat we face, unless they want to face criticism, persecution, and even up to and including imprisonment. And the U.S. is now holding 2,000 suspected ISIS fighters. The question is, what are we going to do with them? Because we don't have the legal channels. They've been so shut down that we don't even really, there's a question mark floating around out there. What are we going to do with all these people? Some of them want to come back home, and thankfully President Trump is saying, no, you're not going to be allowed to come back. So as before, these stories, they're all going to be continued. The information that I've given you is very up to date. But in a week and in a month and a year from now, I'll have to add a whole bunch of more slides, because all these are live stories. They're ongoing as we speak. And with a little effort on your part, you can come up to speed and find one of these subjects that you're most particularly interested in and start becoming a master of the subject. And that is how you can help protect our government of, for, and by the people, and play your part in our national security and our sovereignty and standing up for our constitutional republic. Thank you very much.